Welcome to another episode of Code for Thought. Diversity in the workplace is a very wide-ranging topic, and we already heard from different people like Marianne Hardy, Women in HPC, and others about the subject. And in this episode, I talked to two people about different aspects of diversity. First, we hear from Jeremy Cohen from Imperial College in London. Jeremy has been running a seminar series called Diverse, with the letters RSE capitalized, and he's also the co-author of the paper Understanding Equity, Diversity and Inclusion Challenges within the Research Software Community. And in the second part, we hear from Michael McLeod, who is talking about how LGBTQ people are getting on in the world of STEM, that is, science, technology, engineering and math. The one thing I hope will come across from this recording is that diversity is a broad range and affects people in many different ways. What makes research software engineering interesting in that respect is that in addition to the different backgrounds that engineers can come from in terms of demographics, we also have a diversity in terms of the research areas they work in and the skill sets they require. And indeed, in my conversation with Jeremy Cohen in a minute, we come back to this point. Jeremy has started the series Diverse in 2022, and I took part in a couple of these sessions. The series was born out of a workshop Jeremy went to and one of the international RSE surveys that were run in the past, as Jeremy will tell us in the following interview.
So I'm Jeremy Cohen. I'm an advanced research fellow in the Department of Computing at Imperial College London, and I'm also the Director of Research Software Engineering Strategy at Imperial. I've recently completed a five-year EPSSC RSE fellowship, and moving on from that, taking forward a number of different aspects of work, one of which is work in this area of diversity, equity and inclusion within the research software engineering community.
Okay, and Diverse is exactly what?
So Diverse is a seminar series which started back in 2022. And it actually came about as a result of a workshop that took place in the Netherlands, a workshop called Vive la Différence, Research Software Engineers, which was organized by a group of people who were looking at bringing together an international audience to discuss and to understand more about the challenges around research software and diversity, equity, and inclusion in the research software space. So the workshop took place, as I say, in the Netherlands in April 2022. Mm-hmm. It was a hybrid workshop, so there was an in-person element, but then there was also a lot of things that happened around it online in the preceding weeks prior to the workshop and also following the workshop. And one of the things that came out of this was that there were so many interesting discussions that took place at the workshop, and there was so much material there that we felt that was really important to the wider community. As an invite-only workshop, I think mainly because there was a capacity limit, there was an aim to try and ensure that there were people from across the world who were doing things in the RSE space. We felt that there were a lot of people who missed out on really important aspects of discussions that took place at that workshop. So to try and bring these discussions and bring these ideas and thoughts and some of the interesting material that we covered to a wider audience, it was decided to set up this speaker series called Diverse, which focuses specifically on supporting EDI within the RSE community. So we started with a short series of seminars in summer 2022, and then we had a reasonably long gap and have restarted 2023 with a number of talks.
Why was there a gap?
There was a gap, unfortunately, purely because this is all a voluntary activity, and the people involved, myself, the person leading this, and several other people who've been supporting it, obviously, you know, really struggling with time to try and make all this stuff happen. And I think this is one of the challenges in this space, is that there just isn't the amount of funding that's required to support these activities. And of course, with an international audience, which we're aiming for here, we're really trying to take this to people across the world, and particularly to focus on areas where there has been perhaps less activity in the RSE space, because perhaps there's been less opportunity to develop that activity. There are different demands on people's time, and to try and get a kind of coordinated team of people together who can make this happen has been very challenging. So really, it's a resourcing issue. It's a shame, because I think there's so many people that have got really interesting stuff to say in this space, and we're very, very keen to give people a platform to talk to the international research software community. And I'm obviously pleased that we've been able to continue it this year, and hopefully we will be able to do this in a slightly more sustainable way over the coming months and to continue the activity. But we very, very much welcome also people to get in touch and suggest topics that they'd like to see covered, but also people who feel they have something to say in this space, who want to talk to the international research software community, to get in touch with us and to volunteer to give a talk.
So how big is the team? There's obviously you, because you've been organizing these meetings and these seminars. Who else is involved?
We have a loose-knit team. So I guess behind a lot of this is Michelle Barker, who leads the Research Software Alliance. And I have to credit Michelle for coming up with the diverse name. There is then a sort of a wider group of people who have been very supportive of this, who are effectively international contacts who have access to their local communities in different parts of the world. I think the challenge here has been getting enough people engaged to be able to advertise this to the right groups of people. It's very easy for us to advertise in parts of the world where we have already established research software communities because we have international organizations that can reach out to individual groups, individual institutions within their region. So that hasn't been the problem so much. But what has been, I think, a challenge and something which we've really specifically aimed to do when we set up the series is to reach out to parts of the world where there hasn't been the opportunity yet to develop research software activities, but where we know that, of course, there are people doing software development in the research space. Mm. And to give those people an opportunity to engage with this kind of activity and also to tell us about what they're doing. Because, again, you know, we know people are doing stuff in so many regions of the world that are not yet represented within the wider international research software activities. But we know that people are out there doing interesting stuff. And, you know, I think one of the communities which has demonstrated this really well is the R community, and particularly the R ladies community, who have done a fantastic amount of work setting up kind of chapters internationally. And so we've actually had a lot of engagement from people from that side of things.
You mentioned RSE community and diversity challenges, which brings me to the paper that you've written with Neil Chihong and Caroline Jay, Understanding Equity, Diversity and Inclusion Challenges Within the Research Software Community. Without going into full depth, because we're giving the link to the preprint in the episode notes, but could you quickly summarize what this paper is about and what are the challenges actually facing the RSE community in terms of equality, diversity and inclusion?
This paper came about as a result of some work that we were doing, as you say, with myself and Neil Chihong and Caroline Jay, looking at the data that came out of the International Research Software Survey. This was the international survey from 2018, I believe. So I think there's been another one since then. And what we did was we looked at some of the data there around key aspects of diversity within the community that were represented within the data that's come out of that survey. And we can see that there are challenges around a lack of diversity. I think we are all kind of aware that that's a problem just because we see it within the community more generally. But the data backs that up and shows us that there are challenges and there are things that we can do or there are things we need to do to improve diversity, but that we have a particular challenge there to address. And so what the paper then did was looked at a number of aspects of how we might go about that and also some of the challenges that are behind that. You know, why does that exist? Why are there problems ensuring more diversity in the community? And some of the things are perhaps things that I think we can kind of assume just by looking at the environment that we work in. So within the RSE community, we know that many people come from a computer science and physics background. There are obviously people coming from many other areas as well, but a large number of people in the current community come from an undergraduate background in computer science or physics. And we know already that there are also diversity challenges within these areas anyway. So one explanation for why we see diversity challenges within the RSE community itself. But actually, there's a lot more than that to it. And so what we did in this paper was we looked in much more detail at some of the issues that are kind of preventing a more rapid solution to improving diversity within the community. There's a lot of research that's been done more generally around diversity and sort of understanding diversity challenges. We looked at this idea of what we call safety and similarity. So the idea that people tend to look to work with people who they see are similar to them. And there's a lot of research that explain why that happens, but also that tells us that actually that's not optimal in terms of work communities. So there is research that supports the idea that diverse teams produce better scientific outputs or better scientific results. There are also other pieces of research that go against that idea, but I think there's a lot of material in this space that suggests that diversity within teams is valuable and is important. But we do see that there is this idea that has been looked at and discussed in detail in literature of people kind of looking to work with people like them, which obviously is a barrier to more diverse teams developing. We also looked more generally at things like events and activities, and the sort of supporting processes that can help to improve diversity within running of events and running of activities and so on. So there's quite a bit of stuff in the paper looking at that and looking at some of the underlying work that's been done around that. And then we looked more generally at the idea of just developing a safe and inclusive space for people to work in, because obviously that has a huge bearing on whether people feel comfortable and willing to kind of engage in a community that perhaps isn't yet, you know, a community that doesn't have the diversity represented in it that we would like to see. But we need to ensure that there's a space that makes it a welcoming community and makes people feel comfortable to get involved and engage with that community. So those are kind of, I guess, some of the key areas that we looked at. The other thing that came out particularly within the paper, and again from the survey data, was looking at this idea of how can you make a difference in terms of domain related challenges. So I mentioned that a lot of people come from computer science and physics. We know that those areas themselves are also working to improve diversity within their research domains. But we know that there are a lot of people now who come into RSE from other domains. That, you know, that's growing because, of course, in the research space, we see that there is far more research that is computationally based across all domains. And so we see people across areas where previously there wasn't perhaps software development skills, developing far more of those skills because that's vitally important to the research area that they work in. And so one of the things we looked at was this idea of domain mobility, which is a term that we kind of coined to support this idea of people moving between domains. And the survey data shows some very, very interesting results around how many people move from the domain where they undertook their kind of most recent study to the domain that they currently work in. And while we see that, obviously, as we might expect, quite a number of people are still in the same domain, we also see that there is significant movement of people between different domains. And I think that was interesting because that gives us hope that there is opportunity to actually make a difference by working with people in domains that are more diverse. Obviously, there are differences across domains, and to try and help to improve the diversity within the RSE community on the basis that we know that people can move between domains because they have transferable skills and there are opportunities to apply those skills in a whole range of different areas. So again, there's a fair bit of material kind of talking about that and some charts and showing that how that's represented.
Okay, what's the portion of people who actually have this kind of mobility?
Yeah, so that is something which varies very much between domains. So again, there is data in the paper to highlight this. But I mean, if we look at computer science as an example, and that was one of the areas where we had the largest kind of sample size to work with, we see that 50% of people with a computer science degree or most recent qualification in computer science are working to some extent in a domain other than computer science. And we actually see that just over 20% of people with a computer science background are working entirely in a completely different domain. You know, they have moved away entirely from computing as their kind of core area of work. They're obviously applying computing skills and applying research software skills, but they're doing it in a very different domain. Right. And in fact, interestingly, there are other domains where people have sort of, where larger numbers of people have moved away and are working in other areas. So although the sample sizes were much smaller, we see that in areas such as maths, almost 50% of people are working in other domains, applying research software skills in domains other than that, other than mathematics. And also in electrical and electronic engineering was the other area where we saw a really high rate of kind of movement to other domains. Again, nearly 40% of people are working entirely in another domain, even though their training and their background is in electrical and electronic engineering. So, you know, some interesting figures there, I think, that show that, I guess, proof that the skills that we have in the research software community are very transferable and are skills that can be applied in a huge range of different areas. And, you know, we know that there are differences in diversity challenges across different domains. So that's something which I think is one outcome that shows us that there is scope to address diversity challenges within the RSE community by knowing that we have this flexibility to work in different spaces and to bring people in from different domains, but also for people themselves to have the choice to move into different areas where they feel that there's, you know, interesting work they'd like to engage with.
I should point out that there are plans to continue the seminar series in 2024, but as Jeremy mentioned just now, the effort is run entirely by volunteers, and that means it depends on people's availability, time and energy. Funding for initiatives like this is sparse, as we know, a point I remember Marianne Hardy made in an episode from a few months ago. People talk about diversity and inclusion a lot, but they also need to put their money where their mouths are if they really want to see results. And in the next part of this episode, I want to touch on a very different part of diversity and inclusion, namely the role that members from the LGBTQ community play in tech and science. This is indeed a subject close to my heart, as I experienced myself during my career how difficult it is to come out in the workplace and to colleagues. For the interview, I met with Michael McLeod from the University College in London, who is talking a bit about his experiences in the workplace and also what he would like to see from the science and research software engineering community. Here's Michael.
Hi, my name is Michael McLeod. I'm a senior research software engineer at UCL, which means that I work on computing aspects of research projects here at the university, and I do some teaching as well. And incidentally, I am also a gay man.
And there are not many, actually. I think there's a Stack Overflow survey that I always like to quote, which has respondents of about 90,000 people worldwide. And I think if you look at the demographics, then it's mainly men, but sort of 0.0001% or something like that would identify as gay.
Well, I think, demographically, I think universities can be a little bit different from some of the industry. I actually came to UCL from an industry position, and that was certainly different. I think more reflective of that survey that you describe, where I feel perhaps that there are more LGBT people visibly in the university, and that it's a little bit easier to speak about it. But nevertheless, it's still, you know, not a lot of people really. And one of the things that makes having a perspective on it a little bit difficult sometimes is that it can be such an invisible issue, because you don't really know who is and who isn't. And there can be in scientific communities a little bit of discouragement of talking to personally, and sort of that certain things should be irrelevant, which serves to make it more invisible.
Yeah, do you think it's restricted to the scientific community? Because I think in the tech sector, in the private sector where I worked as well, it was often difficult to talk about personal issues as well, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. When I say scientific community, I don't strictly mean the academic community. What I mean is those who work essentially in STEM, let's say.
Okay.
But I think the key thing there is there can be an attitude of restricting one's attention and focus to known objective problems and rendering other things irrelevant. And that's so common across, I think, both industry and academia in these kinds of fields.
So why do you think that LGBT, or gay, lesbian, bisexual and transgender phase in the workplace?
I think it can vary a lot for different people in this community, because it is such a broad and diverse community. So not wanting to sort of speak for anybody else, but I notice, for example, that we're aware that there are more substantial barriers for trans people in particular, and it's also often a more visible minority, and so the discrimination is often very direct. We've even seen here at UCL issues pertaining to that, with, you know, UCL choosing to leave the Stonewall Equality Index because of these kinds of arguments, because of essentially transphobic rhetoric. So lots of barriers that people are facing that I'm not necessarily facing. Nevertheless, I think there is always a sort of persistent uncertainty in not knowing how you're being perceived and how comfortable people are, and whether it could be an issue. And I think especially if you are, for example, teaching, you know, you think about how students might receive you, especially when your students are from a very diverse international background. People are coming from different ways of thinking, and all of these things can prey on your mind a bit. And I think that's a sort of shared burden for all LGBT people. Like, you all kind of know that niggling feeling.
So you don't know how it lands, basically, if you're coming out. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think certainly, I've certainly had the experience of having to be, maybe not having to be, but feeling I ought to be careful to start with. Mm. And I think most queer people have had the experience of like feeling out a workplace and or any community to try to figure out where they stand and also how much they should be able to say. It's almost sometimes people perceive things that you say as being kind of almost more personal if they pertain to you being LGBT. It suddenly, for some people, it crosses over into too much information, even if it's the same amount of information that you would have got from them. And I think like that thing, it's just, there's a constant feeling that you have to try to navigate things.
So how do you navigate that space?
Well, often what actually ends up making things easier is over time, having sort of friends, even just sort of friendly interactions, but like non-work related interactions, like out at the pub, going for drinks, trying to form a relationship outside of a work context that makes that possible and allows a bit of a breaking down of that wall. And then once that's all sort of like out there, it's, I think, a little bit easier. It breaks that ice. I don't know that I have a good strategy for doing it, because I've always spent quite a bit of time trying, like, not being closeted, but being careful, avoiding gendered language and words if I were like talking about my personal life, you know, that kind of thing. The subtle little things that we've been doing for decades.
So does it get easier for you then, do you think? I mean, sort of, you now had a job in the private sector, you're now going to UCL. Is there, kind of, do you feel that there's a change?
Yeah, I think that it gets easier for us as individuals as time goes on, because we have experienced it more. Also, I just give less of a damn as I get older. Because I think a lot of that concern and carefulness is a hangover from earlier times in our life, and we sort of carry that with us even when it's not always necessary. Of course, that's not, you know, that's not true for everyone, and we are living through a period in time where there is a backlash to some LGBT rights, and that is spreading across the community. Like, obviously, the trans people are at the political forefront of that, but we've seen that the way that people, for example, are clamping down on things like drag, that it goes beyond that to the rest of the community. So, and for some people, that creates a very real amplified concern now compared to even when we were younger. But to some extent, it's realizing that for some of us, at least in certain contexts, you know, we don't need to keep holding on to some of that stuff that we grew up with.
Yeah, well, it's getting kind of difficult to get rid of that ballast a little
bit. Yes, it's very difficult to get rid of that. And I think that's why it can be so beneficial to have LGBT spaces, even within STEM and tech and things like that. Over the summer, I presented at a LGBTQ STEM conference. That was a really nice experience because, I mean, it's a little bit hard to describe, but it was just easier for people to be themselves, and you just never thought to have like your guard up or anything. And yeah, it was just a really pleasant experience. And I think there's a real value in just having those spaces.
So which conference is that, if I may ask?
So I think it was called the London LGBTQ Plus STEM Conference, and it's mostly different scientists around from the different London universities, although the principal speaker was from Oxford. And they were just presenting on, you know, whatever field they happen to work in.
Okay, because that was my next question, or where I want to move on next, because in the tech sector, there are, in fact, some organizations now that deal with LGBTQ communities. There is, I believe, Intertech, that I went to a couple of times during my time at Elsevier. There is Tech Advocate London. So I'm reading this out from my scripts because I want to get the names right. So there are quite a few. So you mentioned the London STEM Conference. Are there any other groups and organizations that are more academically oriented or research oriented?
There are LGBT groups within UCL, for example, including an LGBTQ STEM society community in general, which holds events and talks, as well as encouraging a degree of political engagement and activism. And I think that most universities that I have been a part of have had things like that. But I haven't been aware yet of larger scale ones, and maybe that's my lack of being informed, or maybe it's just not very high profile, but maybe it's not there.
So what do you think we can do to open the doors to a broader community apart from, you know, people that usually go to tech, which are still male, heterosexual, under 40 in most cases? So what from your perspective is it that can be done in practical terms?
I think when it comes to reaching out and increasing diversity, almost like whatever demographics you're looking at, really, it really helps to do that younger. And I think that's particularly true in something like STEM, because STEM jobs require you to have taken an appropriate STEM degree, usually. Mm-hmm. And if people are getting filtered out before they get to that stage, then there's not as much we can do just, you know, hiring. I mean, there are things that you can try to do to address that balance in terms of your hiring policies, like, you know, inviting more people from diverse communities to interview. But I certainly noticed when I was studying computer science that, and I came into computer science after having first studied physics, and, you know, physics is pretty heavily male dominated. But when I went into computer science, like, oh, it was like nothing I'd seen before.
In what sense?
How I couldn't believe how few women were there. I had never been in an environment that was that straight and male before. And, yeah. And you know, that's a problem, because that's obviously, you know, speaking from the point of view of people who've worked in software, that's a big pool of who's going to end up working in it. To some extent, this involves changing the image of what a scientist or a computer programmer or whatever is. So I think one thing that, you know, LGBT people can do in this field is get involved with outreach at, say, schools and things like that, just to hopefully be more visible and create a different impression of what kind of person does this job, because it should be anybody. And I think that those are often the things that are most effective as well. When I've had friends who are working in outreach for specifically, for example, targeting people of color and people from working class backgrounds to apply to Oxford or Cambridge or UCL or whatever, one of the most effective things is just getting into schools and making sure that people know it's possible. And if people know it's possible and they do apply, then they do well. So I think it's about widening what looks possible.
So it's about visibility then, to some extent, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And a little bit about breaking down the stereotypes of what it means to be like a computer programmer. We have a view of a stereotypical computer programmer that correlates with, I think, a lot of attitudes about, you know, straight male people. But that's not necessary to be a computer programmer, and lots of different kinds of people can be it. And it's a very creative job, actually. And I think having more visibility allows us to sort of see those people and those jobs in a different way. And that makes it easier to connect with for people who don't fit that normal mold, because we actually, it's really difficult to disentangle ideas of and our interests and our ideas of the work from the image of the people who do them and what kind of person does them. I think that that's a really tricky thing to do.
I talk to women in HPC and to other women groups about diversity, etc. And they identify two major issues. So first of all, one is to attract people to go into a career in STEM, and the other is to retain them. Is that something that you think applies for LGBTQ community as well?
I think the retention issues, there's certainly something I'm more familiar with from specifically retaining women employees. And that's partly because I think a lot of employers haven't really gotten to grips with accommodating people properly.
And equal pay.
Equal pay, but also appropriate, reasonable adjustments for anything from like pregnancy to menopause. Like there are just more and barriers to progression and to career progression. So to what extent LGBTQ people will face this, I think it will come down to factors often like gender or being trans. And I think maybe for gay men, that retention issue is, it's possible that, you know, it might impact your career progression depending on where you're working and what kind of culture that is there. It's not something that I've experienced personally yet, but I don't know that, like, I'd think of it as a broad umbrella LGBTQ thing so much as it might be the way it intersects with other things, with gender, race, and all of these things that maybe it needs to be looked at, I guess, at a more focused level than, like, LGBT broadly.
Okay, so it transcends that and just, it goes beyond one community.
Yeah, and I think that the experiences of that progression and the extent to which the workplace is built for you is, I think, going to be more about other factors, and I think that maybe LGBTQ issues can compound those. I don't know that I would say, like, we're all affected in the same way, because I think that they're very different.
Okay, so the last question is, with regards to the research software engineering specifically, is there anything that you would like to see from that community that you think or feel is missing at the moment?
I'd like to see us more... I think what might help actually is being a bit more open and engaged with the rest of the scientific community. Research software engineers, it's still a relatively new thing. And as such, we haven't quite gotten in, like, figured out where we are or really integrated into the scientific community in the same way that I think some other fields have. And as a result, I think that makes us less visible, and that makes us have less of a presence in the broader STEM LGBT communities and outreach and conferences. So I think that might be helpful because, well, we're in an unusual position here at UCL because we have a large department, but for most RSCs, you are working...
less than 10 or so.
It might be a little bit isolating, that, you know, it's not that many people. So I think connecting to a broader community and also being part of the visibility would be a nice thing to see from RSCs, to see us kind of engage outwardly a little bit more.
So you would think that the RSE community itself needs to be a little bit more visible before we can sort of, as an LGBTQ community, be visible within it?
I think that we as LGBT people within RSE communities can be a big part of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, trying to make sure that we engage with LGBT visibility and that we make sure that our departments are aware of that and that we are kind of pushing for that. And then hopefully that will make new people who come along feel more comfortable, feel more sure, because they'll be aware if we're consistently engaged with LGBT and broader EDI issues, then people who come into the department won't have to navigate that uncertainty in the same way. And I also think that RSCs are, I mean, I might be biased, but I think it's a really exciting field, a really interesting crossover of computing and traditional scientific research. And we have a good opportunity there to be an attractive proposal for getting into a tech career. So being a strong part of that, of the visibility of RSCs, would be, you know, two birds with one stone. It's going to be good for us.
I think it's fair to say that a lot of things have changed in the last 10, 20 years or so, and there are a number of people who really make a serious effort to ensure that the workplace, including conferences and training sessions, provide a safe place for different parts of the community. Visibility of people with different backgrounds plays an important part in this, as Michael just laid out. In the episode notes, you'll find links to the International RSE survey, the last of which was completed in 2022, the paper Jeremy and others wrote about diversity, and also a couple of links to LGBT initiatives in STEM. Oh, time's up. See you next time. But before I forget, this podcast is covered by the Creative Commons license. See ya.